Good evening and welcome to the Late Debate Budget Special. Joining me tonight we have Oisin Smith, Green Party TD for Dunleary and Minister of State for Public Procurement and E-Government, Regina Doherty, Fine Gael Senator and Leader of the Shannon, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan and Party Spokesperson on Agriculture, Labour Party Senator Marie Sherlock and Ian Keogh, Founder and Editor of news website The Currency. We want to hear from you, so do get in touch and let us know what you think of today's budget. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Well, another budget day over. There were billions being splashed about, but not everyone was happy. Here's how it went.
So this is not the time for an optimism unfettered to the reality of the challenge that we confront. But it is the time for a hope.
Everything will not go back to the way it was before, nor do we want it to, because we are committed to making things better. Spending money.
Oh girl. Spending money. Certainly €4 billion is a very big sum. It's important to bear in mind that the bulk of that, of course, will be spent on COVID-related issues.
The big issue is protecting people who are employed in sectors where there's now mass unemployment as a result of pandemic measures.
The 9% on the hospitality sector and the cut in VAT rate is welcome. Obviously, it's only welcome and it's only useful if those businesses are opened.
What you have to understand is that if you want to retrofit your house, you need to match the funding.
And that was Michael Fitzmaurice there ending our montage of voices on today's budget. Ian Keogh, can I go to you first? Because this really was an extraordinary budget from given where it's coming from.
No, I mean, absolutely, Katie. If you look at it, €17.75 billion package. If we had been talking about this a year ago, we would have thought the country was gone completely mad, driving up the national debt to GDP ratio between 106 and 108, 106 and 108%. Put that into context. That's the sort of numbers that drove us into an IMF bailout the last time around because the debt had become so unsustainable. The government has clearly decided that it's going to unleash its full arsenal. It's going to stand behind business. It's going to keep on funding. It's going to borrow when it has to. But there's also another side to it, which is it could have gone further. And I see some of the criticism that it hasn't gone further. I think there's a recognition from both Ministers McGrath and Donoghue that, you know, we don't know how long COVID-19 is going to be going on for, and that we need some, I suppose, fuel in the tank in case we need to go further in 6 months' time, in 8 months' time. But I've never seen anything like it. There is no precedent within an Irish budget for €17.75 billion expansionary package. And yet, it seems odd to say this, but it's surprisingly cautious at the same time because they do have more money if required next year. But the overwhelming theme of this, I think, is the role of the state. The state is now a banker, it's a financier, it's a lender of last resort. In the case of one of the main schemes that it outlined today, it's even giving away free money for companies that need it. So we've seen a massive expansion in the scale and the scope of the state, which, had you said that would be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael unleashing it, as I said, you would have thought we were completely bonkers.
Yeah, I would ask you that, Marie Sherlock. I mean, it's just been over 100 days in government and Fianna Fáil and the Greens have achieved something that Labour couldn't achieve in the 5 years you were in government with them. They've turned Fine Gael socialist.
Well, I don't know about that. I think this this budget was very much designed to dazzle, and certainly it is the single largest budget we've seen in the history of the state.
But have you been dazzled by it?
Well, I think there has been a lot of parts to the budget, but I think there's a lot of households tonight asking themselves, you know, what impact is it going to have on their lives? And to me, there's been a missed opportunity here in a number of areas in this budget. So there's been a lot of money thrown at the economy and you know, allocated to businesses to try and keep them afloat. But there's a missed opportunity in terms of, in particular, if we look at the employment wage subsidy scheme, there was the potential there to reform it so that you keep businesses afloat, but you also use the opportunity to to train or to reskill, retrain or reskill workers in the days that they're not working. Similarly with the VAT cut. And, you know, there was a very clear call, for, particularly from the hospitality sector, for the VAT cut. They got it. But we don't have any conditions attached with regards to the treatment or the terms and conditions, you know, the paying conditions for workers in the sector. And to me, there's another point here about joining the dots. Like, some of the announcements were very welcome today, right? There was 10,000 additional training and reskilling places. But if you're on the PUP payment at the moment, you have to move from the higher payment of €300 to the lower payment to Jobs Seekers Benefit of €203 to access any of the back to education allowances. So okay, you're better off not training or engaging in the skilling system, because you'll actually get more money waiting for sitting in okay, unemployment. And we okay, can't be
facilitating. Marie, okay, we'll come back to that kind of detail, because I do want to go into what's in it for workers. But just in the general, the politics around this budget, Regina, is this a Fine Gael budget? I saw Marie's colleague Jed Nash saying today Fianna Fáil has been subsumed by Fine Gael and the merger is now complete.
Well, right, that's just, I suppose, smart talk. But what it is a coalition budget of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Green Party. And without doubt, it's the single biggest investment in Irish people in the history of the state. And it's particularly at a time when it's needed the most. And for people to say that there's nothing in it for me misses the fact that we have nearly 4 billion extra being invested in a health service to provide a safe public health service in a timely manner to, God forbid, the people that might be affected by the COVID pandemic that we're going through, as well as all of the other areas like disability, mental health, cancer screening, and all of the areas that were outlined today by Stephen Donnelly, from an education perspective, from a defence perspective, from...
Now, the defence forces are not very happy with...
Well, to be fair, there's a lot of headroom to make space and progress in defence forces, but it's far bigger than the investment that they got last year, the year before, the year before.
Well, that wouldn't be saying much now. They'd be the first to say.
Okay, but we're going in the right direction. One of the single biggest investments in our justice system, over €3 billion. So, you know, for people to say that there's nothing in it for me means that they're thinking about their own pocket. And that's fine, because that's what we've all been conditioned to think when it comes to budget day. What am I getting? An extra fiver here, or, you know, an extra percent
because
in the tax.
Because people like you have conditioned us to think like that.
Well, no, look, come here. I'm the product of not giving the fiver in the budgets, and so therefore I tried to bring in indexing so that we would have, you know, a continuity and a sustainability in it.
But does this feel
otherwise,
like
the people got their way?
Does this feel like a Fine Gael budget?
Well, it does, because when I look at the investment, particularly around supporting livelihoods through supporting businesses, when I look at the investment in our justice system, when I look at the investment in our education and higher educational system, when I look at the investment in our childcare system, all of the things that we laid out that were important to us in the election, that seems like an absolute lifetime ago at this stage, are present in the budget. The Rebuilding Ireland budget has been extended and accentuated this year, that we're going to actually build what we said we were going to build 4 years ago next year, notwithstanding COVID. So there's very much a flavour of Fine Gael of this. But also, you have to be fair, there's very much a flavour of the Green Party and also of Fianna Fáil. And that's why we're in a coalition together, trying to provide in the best interests of our people with money that we are borrowing and that we're put on the shoulders of, you know, our future generations. But because we need it now, because we need that investment and the protection okay, of both people's lives and their livelihoods.
OK, let me bring in Oisín Smith. Are the Green Party being held responsible today, Oisín, for the bitter pills in this budget, the carbon taxes, the tough measures?
Are we being held responsible for spending 17.75 billion in one of the largest budgets, the largest budget by far, the most unusual budget that's ever run? I don't think there's any being held responsible. I'm really proud and really astonished by this budget, and there is going to be huge changes to society as a result of it, and they're all going to be very positive, and I'm very happy about it. I mean, the, you know, as mentioned, 4 billion extra in healthcare is incredible. 2 billion of that going on Sláinte Care, 2 billion to protect us from infection. You know, this is an incredible budget that's going to do amazing things to deal with climate change, disability, mental health, every area. I don't think there's any, I went through the budget, I've been working on this the last 4 weeks in the Department of Public Expenditure. I don't think there's one area that didn't get a rise in expenditure. You know, we really went through this with a fine tooth comb. We went through everything. And I'm very proud of how progressive this budget is.
Okay, like
we had it analysed by the ESRI. We asked, you know, what is the effect of all the changes that we're making? What does it do to every sector in society? And looking through the 10, you know, if you look at each decile, each tenth of society from the lowest to the wealthiest, they are all better off, and they're mostly better off at the at the at the people who are poorest in society. So and that took a lot of changes, and it took a lot of moving things around. We kept changing it until we got there, and I'm really happy about it.
Okay, I'll get back to you about the areas that that may feel that they haven't been catered for in this budget. I just want to bring in Matt before we move on. Matt, a tweet today: if the government gave everyone in the country a free house, Piers Doherty would be wailing like a foghorn that it didn't come with a free sky.
Sinn Féin would probably be in government if something like that was to happen. This was a missed opportunity. To be quite frank about it, I've been speaking to a number of people. They've told me the only difference that they'll notice as a result of this budget is the increase in their cost of getting to work through the carbon tax increase. And Regina says, you know, that people are looking at this as what's in it for them, as if it's some form of, you know, selfish, egotistical endeavour. The reason people were looking at this budget to see what's in it for them is because they're at their pit's end. They're struggling. They were looking for a break. Those people who lost their jobs as a result of the pandemic were looking to see whether or not the government would restore the PUP payment to a level that was somewhat manageable. They were looking to see whether the wage subsidy scheme defects, because it is now a deficient scheme.
Which has been extended.
It's a deficient scheme. It doesn't address, and we've businesses all over the country telling us that it doesn't address those people. And we talk about housing, we're going to have an additional 600 houses in total next year on top of what was already committed. So the truth of the matter is, when people are asking what's in it for them, it's not just in relation to whether or not there's a few extra pound in taxation. They want to know that the cost of living burdens that are on them are going to be addressed. They're not. Those people who have children were looking to see whether there was anything in respect of childcare. There isn't. Those people who are on housing waiting lists were looking to see if there was any prospect of them being housed next year. Chances are not. Those people who are on hospital waiting lists waiting for acute or emergency treatment, they're probably still going to be waiting as long, all because okay. The money that was invested wasn't invested in the right places with the right emphasis.
Okay, Regina Doherty, can I ask you that question? Because I think people were surprised about that, genuinely surprised. Why was there even not an attempt in this budget to address the issue of childcare? Surely this is one of the issues we realise this year of all years. This is a huge issue for so many families.
So I think what is planned for childcare in next year's budget is the follow-on from the plan that was launched by Catherine Saffone last year, which this year will see €638 million euros extra invested in early years learning and childcare. It will see 1,000 extra SNAs for our children in our primary schools. It will see all of our childcare providers have access to the EWSS scheme, which is supporting the wages in the sector. So to say that there isn't anything in the budget...
But that was there already.
...for childcare. Yeah, well, they still have to be financed. And so when you think about when we actually established the PUP payment, we had planned on it for 12 weeks. And here we are, 8-9 months later, and having to acknowledge that we have to extend and finance it and fund it right into the entire of next year because of the uncertainty around where we are in the pandemic. And also, I don't really, to be honest with you, take kindly to you putting words in my mouth. I don't think anybody looking at the budget today is egotistical looking along the lines as to see how it'll impact in their lives.
So were your words. You said people were looking at it, asking what's in it for me, and you thought that that was
an unfair mechanism. I didn't use the word egotistical.
No, I didn't
at all
say
at all. So don't put words in my mouth if you don't mind. But also what would be really, really pleasant, for once from an opposition perspective, and actually I'm only saying this about Sinn Féin because it's not true of the other opposition parties who can be gracious enough to see what we're trying to do to support Irish lives and livelihoods, is to actually look at the entire budget in the round. And for once in your life, just to actually say, in the midst of a pandemic where people's tens of thousands of families' lives are being impacted, that what we are doing is actually supporting those lives, those livelihoods, through progressive measures of financials, through our business supports, but also through the progressive supports that we're putting through in our health services and our educational services, through retraining, through Solace, to the extra 1,000 places, to the reduction of the waiting lists, to the houses that are being built, that will be acquired, that will be refurbished. All of it in the round might not be absolutely perfect.
No, but
just for once acknowledge that the 17.8 billion euros that's been allocated out of taxpayers spending and borrowing, future borrowing, is actually being done to invest in Irish lives and livelihoods,
okay,
and will make a difference to people's
future. There are aspects of this budget that we call for and we welcome. But I have
which aspects? Welcome the aspects.
Well, I think for a start, we welcome the funding for disability services. It's something that my colleague Pauline Tully has been driving. We had a private member's motion before the Dáil last week. And in fairness, the disability sector themselves ensured that their voices were heard, and rightly so. But I also have a responsibility to speak from the perspective, as I hear it, from those people who have been impacted. So I have a responsibility, talking as I am daily and weekly to people who are in rented accommodation, who are now faced with rent hikes, to ask the question, why did this government offer absolutely nothing to them in this budget?
Let me put that one to Oisin. Oisin, you talked there about the fine tooth comb that was that this budget was gone through to make sure that nobody was left out. What about renters?
Yeah, I'm a renter, so I know all about it.
You're a renter on a ministerial wage.
Absolutely right. Well, I wasn't for years. So, one of the things that's happened is that you can't be evicted at the moment if you lose your job as a result of going on the PUP. So you are protected until next spring from any form of eviction, and also from having your rent increased. And your rent can't be increased by more than 4% if you're living in a rent.
Sorry, did you
zone.
Not vote against legislation to bake this into the system there just in the last month?
No, I actually voted to. I voted the opposite. I voted to protect people from eviction by extending what was a COVID measure which was going to automatically expire. I voted for a new law that would add extra protection for people who lost their jobs as a result of their business going down as a result of coronavirus. So anybody who went onto the PUP couldn't be evicted. And also couldn't have their rent increased at all. And anybody else who's renting can't have their rent increased by more than 4% at any one time. So, I think one of the biggest problems for somebody who's renting is the fact that there isn't anywhere to rent. When you go to look for a place, there is such a shortage of housing, you can't find a place. And when you do find a place, it's incredibly expensive, and that they won't take somebody, who's on HAP. And so that's why one of the most important things that's happening in this budget is the construction of 9,500 new homes. And we pushed during the programme for government negotiations and also during these budget negotiations to move away from a system of renting homes and of a system of obtaining houses by acquisition and so on to actually constructing new houses. That the idea in the past was that social houses were called social housing solutions, where they weren't actually new houses. And now we're embarking on a programme of building 9,500 homes in 1 year, which is an incredible number of houses. And I think that's going to have a huge effect on anybody who's renting who is buying a home.
I've got two people who want to come in here on that, Marie.
And the really despairing thing about the housing announcements today is that next year, under Rebuilding Ireland, we were supposed to see a greater share of the funding and activity towards building and acquiring houses, and less people being put into HAP and rent supplement. And that was just turned on its head today. So there was a lousy additional, 600 new houses to be built next year, yet there's 5,800 additional HAP and rent supplement places. And I think this is the real big issue here. We're not going to resolve the issues in the housing crisis. We're not going to resolve the housing crisis unless we start doing things differently, unless the state starts building more houses. I've heard Fianna Fáil and indeed the Greens talk many a time about the need for a state building programme, and yet we see the figures today, which is putting the emphasis time and again on the private rental sector.
But is that just being realistic, if I can ask you that? Because there is an issue with capacity to build and with what can be done, can be achieved. We saw what was built last year and indeed the year before. Is there an issue that this is where as far as we can go at this stage? Yeah, Regina.
If I could just answer that, and again, it's not to be disrespectful for anybody's ambition, because I actually, I'm halfway between agreeing with you and obviously very supportive of the Rebuilding Ireland Housing Programme, but it does have to be realistic insofar as that the ambition of many social and affordable houses that were to be built this year is not going to be reached. And it's not because the money isn't there, it's not because the plans aren't there, it's because COVID has interrupted that. And by the same token, we have to recognise that the COVID restrictions will have a similar, hopefully if not as large an impact next year. But what has become available to us is a huge cohort of houses that were being rented on a daily or a three daily or a half a week basis through Airbnb and the likes of a short-term rental that now don't have anybody in them. And so therefore, of course, we're going to take the opportunity to put people in homes, because I'm telling you, the 10,000 people that are waiting on a housing list, on a homeless list in Dublin, don't really care who owns the home. They just want a roof over their head. And yet, OK, long term, if we can actually build the social houses that we have in the Rebuilding Ireland plan, that was, to be honest with you, was criticised by people in the last number of years, but is now being lauded as being repackaged as something different when we all know it isn't. But it's a plan that was working, and we're taking advantage of the fact that we have all of this empty stock in Ireland at the moment.
Now, I'm sure people out there will be screaming and saying, we were screaming for this for years to do something about the Airbnb. And it was long-fingered, and it took the COVID crisis to actually empty out the Airbnb.
Again, not to be disrespectful, the reason we couldn't do anything about it was because of the constitutional property rights that still exist in Ireland, and was also as a result of why we couldn't extend the refusal to allow people to be evicted, which is why we had to change the law a couple of months ago. But you don't look a gift horse in the mouth if we have all of these empty units.
Hang on a second. If there was a constitutional issue, how could a change in the law have sorted out a constitutional issue?
So what we did, we couldn't have a blanket banning on rent evictions unless the country was closed down, which is why we could extend it only, I think, till the beginning of August. Then when the country was opened up, and we had expected, obviously, that it would stay and remain that way, but it hasn't worked out that way, the advice from the Attorney General was that we couldn't have a blanket ban on something because it did prohibit people's constitutional rights. And so what we did then was we extended a new law to make sure that anybody that had been particularly financially impacted by COVID, as in lost their job or, you know, being on short time, couldn't have a rent increase or couldn't have to be evicted. And that was within the confines of the Constitution as far as we could go.
Matt's been trying to get in.
Well, I have to say, what we have is two government ministers both making absolutely opposing, contradictory arguments. So you have one saying that they voted to protect people from eviction and another saying that it was constitutionally impossible to do so. There's lots of legal advice that absolutely sets out how the government could and should have actually protected renters from rent increases and from evictions. The government decided not to do it. I think Oisín needs a new tooth comb, to be quite frank about it. If he thinks,
I don't need a comb.
If he thinks, well, you said that you had gone through this budget with a fine tooth comb on one hand, and on the other hand, you said that the government was moving away from the subsidisation of private landlords into actually building houses, when the fact is that the government will build an extra 600 houses next year on top of what it was already committed. Nowhere
there is
near the level of ambition,
nowhere near the level of ambition
that was left. And in fact, there's more money in this budget towards the subsidisation of private landlords and developers than there is towards actually genuinely affordable housing schemes. And they're the facts as they stand out. And, you know, to be quite honest, you know, nobody wants to just get involved in an argument for the sake of it. But this was a real opportunity to actually turn the tide in terms of investing in capital infrastructure, in terms of actually delivering on an ambitious housing programme.
10.1 billion would have required in capital infrastructure
what we should have had. What we should have had.
Probably the highest value in the history of the state is being invested in capital infrastructure, and you think that's a missed opportunity?
Yes, absolutely.
Can I bring in Ian?
Regina's answer is that they can stay in Airbnbs.
My answer is to look at the gift horse that has been a huge amount of housing stock that has become available to rent on a long-term basis.
What happens when the economy reopens? Those Airbnbs will revert
the
type, and the people who are living in them will be invited.
One voice.
The government will give them absolutely no protection.
They won't.
Ian Keogh.
Clearly, well, where to follow on all of that? But look, clearly it'd be great if we were building more houses. I was surprised there wasn't more in there on rental accommodation and also on childcare. But there is a context to all of this. You know, if things don't go well in the next couple of months and there isn't a deal, we're looking like a no-deal Brexit. Every week that goes by without a vaccine is costing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of euro towards the economy. So it's the normal rules don't apply in relation to this budget. I think that's why we've seen the 17.75 billion euro package. The government has clearly laid down its bet on the table, and that is if they can keep companies alive and businesses alive and keep the wage subsidy scheme, however imperfect it may be, and people can argue about the merits of that one way or the other, if they can keep all of those supports, that they can keep the economy and the country on life support through this crisis, in the hope that when a vaccine comes, and hopefully it will come sooner rather than later, that all of these people who are out of work will be able to go back into jobs and that the companies will still be alive. Nobody wants a situation where you walk around and it's just a ghost town forever and ever and ever. And I think the one thing that really struck me
Katie Day, I think an awful lot of people, it really resonated when they talked about youth unemployment of 34%.
Yeah,
that was a. Do you know what? That really sent a jolt down my back. I come from Enniscorthy down in Wexford, and even before the crisis, it had an unemployment rate of 33%, which is one of the unemployment black spots in the country. But when you hear of young people, one in three out of work. And I think that's what the government is looking at. I can kind of understand it, potentially,
a massive social problem if that is allowed to fester for any time at all.
It is. And you know what? It's even more worrying than that. When you look at, you know, all these people are the people who are saddled with the debt that the government has had to borrow to try and fund it through this crisis. They're going to have to work longer before they can get to their pension age. And their pensions are going to be smaller, and most of them are locked out of the accommodation system. There is a generational crisis coming down the tracks. Now, I know the government are talking about a national development plan and a wider, economic stimulus plan for trying to redefine the economy. But I really hope they put young people at the heart of that. I think today was about triage. It's about getting the economy to next year, trying to keep businesses alive. But I do think we need a piece of vision, because when you hear of one in three young people unemployed, locked out of pensions, locked out of the accommodation market, you have to say, you know, we're staring down the barrel of a lost generation, and it's really worrying.
Yeah, let me give you a flavour of the kind of text reaction we've been getting in. Again, quite a few on childcare. There was no mention on childcare. This can be a second mortgage for lots of families. And again, this was something we would have heard a lot of from Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil in the run-up to the election, and indeed the Green Party, that, you know, we were going to tackle the childcare crisis. So I think a lot of people are genuinely taken aback that there was no mention at all of childcare in that budget.
And Katie, can I just say on that, because really important, like, as in, you know, we talk about the unemployment rate, and one of the things that we haven't mentioned, or it isn't part of the public discourse, that there was about 90,000 people, just short of 90,000 people, who left the labour force in the second and third quarter of this year. And they were predominantly, in the main, women. So we're facing a youth unemployment crisis coming down the tracks, but we're also facing a very serious issue about a whole spate of people who are out of the labour market, out of the labour force, who feel that they can't take up a job because of particular circumstances. And childcare, affordable childcare, is critical to that. And, you know, Regina talks about the millions put into the sector as it is, but the budget is about what the increase in allocation is for next year. Like, we have a huge issue with regards to paying conditions in the sector, parents facing the second highest costs across Europe, and we saw no budge on that today, and it's really disappointing.
Okay, just another flavour here. Hi Katie, I wonder, are we in the era of Sinn Féin style budgets where money grows on trees? This is Sean in Meath. Is he one of your
supporters
there, Regina? Government strategies to borrow like a Celtic tiger speculator and hope that all other states do the same. The prudent public will pay again as savings value eroded. And somebody else saying here in another text, some waste of money. How is it going to be repaid? The economy is shut down. And there is quite a few more along those lines.
Katie, can I answer that?
Yes, Oisin.
Yeah, so not to make a big political point about it, but that question did come up to me, people saying, you know, who's going to pay for this? And look, the advice that we were getting from the Fiscal Advisory Council and, you know, from the ECB and so on, was that there was a risk to borrowing a lot of money, but there might be a larger risk to not borrowing enough, and that we could arrive at a point where we had crashed our economy by not actually borrowing enough. And we're used to the Fiscal Advisory Council every year saying, you got to cut back, you got to not spend so much, you're going too far. And this year they said the opposite. They said, you really don't want to risk not spending enough. So we really didn't want to take that. We didn't want to take that risk. We have to support. There are a whole lot of people in society who got affected unevenly by the pandemic. There were a whole lot of sectors that got affected differently, or different parts of society, different groups of people some people did fine out of the pandemic. Other people lost everything. And we had to make sure that we were targeting the money correctly and that there was a sufficient push of state intervention. And everything has changed in 6 months, all the way across Europe. The underlying assumptions about how economies work and what the role of a government in is has changed completely. We're into an era of massive state intervention. We have an enormous problem that's not just facing Ireland, but facing every country in the world. There is a general global response, which is a public sector response and not a private sector. We're not going to leave things to the market. It's going to involve massive state intervention.
Katie, can I just come in on that, if I may? Yeah, as I said at the start, and it's a point that Oisin's making there, the state has really increased, you know, its size and its scope. That has to be paid for. Now, the question arises, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. We've pumped an extra €4 billion into the Department of Health. When the crisis subsides, is that going to be, you know, unwound? Are they going to take it out?
Because the government who tries to take this money back.
Yeah, but the problem is, at that point, then we're either going to face into a really high tax economy. It has to be paid for at some point. You can borrow the money this time and next year, but fundamentally, at the end of the day, the numbers will have to match. So either the state is going to have to unwind an awful lot of that additional spending, and I agree that's a really hard thing to do, because once you put money into the public sector, it's really hard to take it out. And there's only one other place to make the books balance, and that's by increasing taxes. So there are options, and I'm just wondering, has there been any thought at government level over
there
what happens in 2 or 3 years' time?
So
are we going to have increased taxes in that case, or are you going to pull back some of the money out of services in a year's time?
The emphasis has been on trying to find one-off expenditures cap. That's why there was €10 billion of capital, because it's once-off. It's not something that you're tied into every year thereafter. And the same with the COVID expenditure. We're going to be spending €50 million a month on TPE, but we're hoping that that's not going to be the case in 5 years' time. So there are huge, huge increases in expenditure that only last in 2021.
Regina.
I was just going to say, I think what Ian says is obviously is very apt, which is why Michael McGrath moved this evening to talk about setting out a plan as to how we're actually going to reduce the deficit. It isn't a magic tree, a phrase that's constantly used by Sinn Féin. The money does have to be paid back. And yes, we are in a position, the luxury of a position of being able to borrow money at the cheapest rate that we've ever been able to borrow on a 30 or a 40 year bond. But that, you know, is not something that's sustainable. And we have our borrowing limits, we have our spending limits, and we do need to recognise that very, very soon we do need to start talking about unravelling and unwinding the amount of investment that we have in the state and where it can come from and what we can do. And okay, we are in the lovely position of the economy providing more of a yield this year than we had expected when we sat down in March or April when we looked at the effects of the pandemic. We need to make sure that we support those businesses so that when we do get through to spring or summer next year and have a vaccine, all of those viable businesses that are just vulnerable at the moment will switch back on. And all of the money that people are not spending at the moment who are lucky enough to still have their jobs will have a glut of money that they might spend in the Irish economy next year and the year after.
So was it not a time, given the level of savings from people who have not been affected by this pandemic, and we know that savings in this economy have gone up hugely in this time, and you're just saying there, you're hoping that the floodgates will open when everything comes back. But was that not a time to hit up that sector of society for increased taxes? The money is there.
So, OK, I'm not sure increased taxes would have been beneficial to any sector of society this year. And OK, we had cohorts of businesses who were benefiting from people spending what would have been their holiday money or what would have been, you know, money that they spent on other stuff that just wasn't available this year. People like who fitted out their new houses with carpets or new sofas or decked up their back garden. There was an industry that was well supported by people who were redirecting their spend this year because they couldn't go away or they weren't going away in Ireland. But that's not something that's going to be sustainable. What are people going to spend their money in September or November or January? Like, there will be a glut of money. There already is. There'll be a larger glut of money next year. It'll be Michael and Pascal's job to try and find incentives to make sure that people spend that and spend it in the Irish economy.
Well, I just on the broader point, I don't think the risk here was doing too much. I think the risk was doing too little. And in fact, I think we could and should have gone further. I also accept the point that we need to have taxation policy.
I was listening to your colleague Piers Doherty on Primetime just before we came down to studio. And it seemed to me that what he was suggesting we should have borrowed is like a few hundred million more than what this budget package is. There isn't much between the two budget packages.
In terms of the net figure, absolutely. But we also included provision for additional tax take through asking those people who came out unscathed and who are on huge incomes, for example. So we suggested a solidarity tax of 3% for those earning over €140,000, because the reality is most people didn't spend the pandemic buying new sofas or getting the garden done. Most people spent the time during the pandemic worried about how they were going to survive into the coming months. And it is ironic that the only tax that the government decided to introduce was an increase in the carbon tax. That tax that impacts disproportionately on lower income people. In my home county of Monaghan, they call it the tax for living in the country because those people who have no choice in terms of how they get to work other than to use their car. The big impact of today's budget is the fact that, and just in case I don't get an opportunity later on in the programme, I think the one big glaring gap in terms of, you know, and we've talked about a number of them, but what to me just is really disappointing that the government didn't take this opportunity when there was an increase in expenditure to get rid of the imbalance in terms of public sector pay. Our nurses and our teachers and all those who've been on the front line, I've been in the Dáil when people have stood up and applauded them, yet there are young people in those sectors who have been sweating and crying and doing everything that we asked of them, and the government couldn't recognise the pay injustice that still continues to exist in that sector. I think that to me is one of the travesties,
Katie,
of what we saw today.
That?
Well, can I first of all ask you to respond to the first point, because I think this is an issue. I know that a lot of the independent TDs and the rural independents and all that have been raising this for some time and very loudly today. There is that issue of imposing carbon taxes on people in circumstances where they have absolutely no alternative in order to get to work or to move about or in any shape or form. Or even if they had the money for an electric vehicle, there is nowhere to charge it, in loads of places around the country.
We're bringing in carbon taxes because we're advised by scientists that this is the most, and economists, that this is the most effective way to deal with climate change, and that it is a very important ingredient in the response. And in the Dáil this evening, I heard one of the TDs saying that he doesn't subscribe to climate change. And that's like saying, I don't subscribe to gravity.
That's a different argument.
So just
address the issue of people who don't have an alternative. Are they just supposed to suck it up?
What we did was we brought in welfare changes. We brought in a set of welfare changes to which we were advised would balance the loss from the carbon tax. So we brought in an increase in the qualified child allowance, an increase in fuel allowance, an increase in the living alone allowance, an increase in the working family payment, and so on. And those payments were such that they would balance any loss from the carbon tax.
But if you are not in receipt of any of those payments, if you're not in receipt of welfare at that level,
if you're not in the poorest 30% of society, then it's going to be cheaper for you when you go to tax your car, and cheaper for you when you go to buy a car, so long as you choose a more fuel efficient model. So that's one of the things that happened as well.
Do you not understand, Oisín, that some people can't afford to buy a new car? They have a car, they have a family car.
And
they were encouraged the last time the Green Party were in government to purchase a diesel car. They did so. Now the Green Party in government alongside Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and to their shame I have to say, the Labour Party tonight, by supporting a carbon tax, have decided that those people who have no choice, if you come from my town of Carrickmacross, there is nowhere you can go on public transport other than Dublin twice a day. If you have to go to another part of our own county, never mind it, an adjoining county, you have to take your car. If your children are playing in a football match, you have to take them in a car. If you want to go to meet friends, more likely than not you're going to have to take your car, because there is no investment in public transport, has been none over several decades. So what today's budget meant for all of those people was that they will pay an additional price. At the same time, those on extremely high wages haven't been asked to contribute something to the national effort at this time.
It is true. If you are filling your car with 60 litres of diesel, it will cost you an extra €1.50, and I absolutely accept that. And that is the price. At the same time, we are spending a much larger amount of money on rural public transport. We are also you have to accept.
Let me just give you a text we've just got in here. Mm-hmm. Last summer, this is from Tom in Kilkenny. Last summer, I experimented with public transport to and from work, Kilkenny to Waterford and back, bus to train station, bus to nearest bus stop to work, and 1 mile walk. 2.5 hours to get there. Only one bus every half hour in Kilkenny, so up early not to miss it in case I'd missed the train. Then 25 minutes waiting for a bus in Waterford. Missed the train on the way home, so I rang my wife. Car journey is 35 minutes door to door. I was long longer in Kilkenny waiting for a bus and train than the drive to work. There are no public transport options here, so we're sitting ducks for carbon taxes, and that Dublin workers won't pay due to decent public transport.
So there will be, there is a huge increase. There's never been such a large investment in public transport as there will be next year. Part of what we negotiated in the programme for government was that for every euro spent on roads, there would be 2 euros spent on public transport.
But
that's
do we not just hear that bus routes
years
are being slashed?
We can't, look, we can't pretend that climate change is not happening. It's like the tide coming in. We have to do something about it. And every government up to now before us has said, oh, it's not happening. We'll protect you by closing our eyes and pretending that it's not happening. It's coming down the tracks. And these changes in taxation and so on are coming down from Europe anyway. We need to get ahead of the curve. We need to provide something for everybody. We need to, you're absolutely right. We need to provide options for everybody so they have an alternative. Like one of the things we're doing is that all of the money that comes from the carbon tax is being ring-fenced for things to deal with the disbenefits of having to pay that. So, for example, 300 million being spent on retrofitting houses is amazing. The fact that we're going to bring in Wi-Fi hubs in towns and villages so that people can work without having to commute so far. We're going to bring in a new REP scheme for farmers, which is 20 million euros.
When is that coming in? Because you committed in the programme for government that we're going to see that in January. There's no mention of it in today's budget.
There is 20 million euros in current expenditure for a new environmental REP scheme for 2021.
That's far off the billion euro REP scheme that we were committed in the budget. And you see, I think what Oisin has just exposed is how out of touch the Green Party actually are. So he talks about retrofitting. Again, retrofitting grants cover about 50% of the cost of actually carrying out the works if you're lucky. Most people don't have the 50% to match fund. He talks about our responsibilities in terms of climate action. We all accept that we have responsibilities on climate action. What I have just outlined to him, and he has no answer other than the climate emergency that we're facing, but what I have outlined is that this is not an environmental measure. This is a tax on people who don't have any alternative, and it is unjust. It is unfair.
We're getting quite a big reaction in on this, as you might imagine, Oisin. Katie, where is this glut of money? I'm driving an 05 car and lucky to have it. Had to move to the country in order to buy a shoebox. Stuck commuting for the rest of my life, except for the respite offered by COVID. The Greens need to get real. Most people in Ireland are only just surviving. That's Paul, who is in Naas. Those who were working, this is another older listener. Those who were working hard to drive to work as public transport wasn't an option due to COVID. Where is the savings in that? Old people can't use their free travel anymore. It's too dangerous due to COVID. This will be a fact until the vaccine. And a couple for you, Regina. Remind Regina it was Fine Gael who drove the youth out of the country and then cut the dole. And also, nothing for OAPs, and ye are not mentioning a word about us, says James in Tipperary. Marie, you've been trying to get in.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the discussion has started tonight about how to pay for these measures, and I suppose there's fear now struck in the hearts of a lot of people going, well, you know, the expansion in the health service, is that going to be a temporary expansion or is this going to be something more permanent? And I was really struck today, carbon tax at 108 million was the single revenue generator, has been already said, and there was a complete failure to countenance any other tax proposals. The Labour Party, we talked about an additional levy on bankers, looking at higher earners. And you know, you asked at the start of the programme about, you know, what party was driving this budget. Well, certainly Fine Gael are very much driving this budget because of so little with regards to tax today. And that has to change if we are to have a more comprehensive childcare supports in this country, better education system. Like, one of the really striking things today is that we had no proper funding for the third level sector for the media. Term. Now, this issue has been going on for many, many years. It's a greater crisis now because of the lack of the cash cows, the international students within Irish universities. And that structural issue of funding has to be, within third level, has to be resolved. But again, walked away from making a decision on that and kicked the can down the road.
Yeah, Ian.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's the time to be taxing wealth just for the sake of it. I mean, at this point, we need that money to go back into the economy and to be spent. Look, it's grand to say let's tax bankers more, let's tax people on 140 grand more. You know, the sums of money at the end of there are relatively modest, and it's mostly political point scoring.
I think I can see the issues around the carbon tax from both sides, to be honest with you. Obviously, there's a massive issue around the climate emergency. And, you know, these have been long term commitments that have been given, you know, years in advance. I just think the issue at this particular time where people are being advised not to use public transport, where they're trying to get to work, particularly those around the country, you know, I can really see how it would grate with an awful lot of people. It might have been time maybe to push it off a year, I would have thought.
But I suppose then they, you know, they'd be accused of dodging the issue.
Yeah, but I mean, as I said, this isn't a normal budget and it's not a normal time. And you know what? At a time where you're said, actually, unless it's a real emergency, don't get on public transport, don't take the bus. You know, putting the tax on that is, it's, I can see how it might really annoy people.
What about that VAT cut for the hospitality sector, Ian? I mean, people were screaming for this during the summer when they were desperately trying to retrieve what was left of the summer season. And it was no, we can't, that's not going to happen. And now you get a VAT cut and you can do no business for a lot of people.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the government introduced the stay and spend scheme, which, to be honest, I think they'll admit in hindsight probably wasn't the best idea given what happened. And if they were going to introduce it, should have been introduced immediately rather than in October. The hotel and the hospitality industry have been looking for this VAT cut. You know, it's been a real clarion call for them. Interesting, if you look at the Tax Strategy Group papers, which is, you know, a bunch of senior civil servants to get together and they advise the government on what they can do around tax. They said, actually, it's not going to do very much. The issue isn't around the level of VAT. The issue is, in fact, that there's no demand out there. But I can, you know, the hospitality industry want it. The restaurateurs wanted it. And there's very little else the government can do for them other than give it to them. So it's kind of a statement that when things come back, we're trying to help you on your feet. It's clearly not going to be passed on. I don't think it's designed to be passed on. It's designed to help sort of put some robustness back into the accounts of hotels and restaurateurs. But I can tell you there would have been murder from that sector had they not got it.
Can I ask you about another one that was a huge, huge story in the run-up to the election, the pension age. And Regina, I remember you that was the hill you were going to die on. You said this has to be done. It's just for future generations. We have to sort this out. And today, without a buyer relieve, that policy was abandoned.
I'm not sure it's abandoned.
500 million?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure it's abandoned. And I mean, the reason it's a hill I die on is because I know how unsustainable the social insurance fund is. And like, one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to run out of money or we're going to have to pay you less. So unless some other measure is going to come up, and we're set up the commission around pension ages, I think is going to be established.
Were you disappointed to see what we did today on that?
No, this is not my money. It's not, you know, whatever policy is arrived at, as long as it's sustainable to make sure that the people of my generation, my children's generation, can be secure in the knowledge that they will get a state pension when they retire, whether it's at 65 or 68 or whatever age it is, we need to make sure that it's sustainable. So if a new way of making sure it can be sustainable can be found by this commission and to be given to everybody at 66 or 65, then that's deadly. I'd be the happiest woman in Ireland. But based on the figures that I have and that I know that's coming into the SIF and how quickly it's going to go into the red, it wasn't a sustainable thing for me to go out and sell to people. I didn't have a magic money tree. You know, and maybe we'll find a new way. And I really do wish them well, because it really was a very, very serious issue. Some of my own neighbours, I live in a very small cul-de-sac, and some of my own neighbours refused to vote for me, haven't voted me for years because of this issue. So people really take the security of their pension and when they expect it very, very seriously. And so it is a big issue. And whilst we might have sidelined it for a year, the Commission is most likely going to come back with either scenarios that we were faced with 20 years ago when Seamus Brennan first started talking about this, and a number of years ago when we sat down and started talking about automatic enrolment and pension age increases. And it's not popular, and it's probably one of the main reasons why I lost my seat, amongst others, and that's okay. But it is a circle that needs to be squared, and either we're going to have to put more money into the SIF, or we're going to have to tax people more from a PRSI perspective, or we're going to have to acknowledge that the age that we're paying people at, all three don't balance in the same equation.
Regina's right there, isn't she, Marie?
Well, look, it has only just been postponed for a year, so while certainly the the postponement is very welcome, you know, that there are very serious issues coming down the tracks. And it goes back to my earlier point about the number of people at work are seeking work in this economy, that if we don't have enough people paying taxes and paying PRSI into the Social Insurance Fund, there is an issue.
But there is an issue already.
And that's why there has to be such focus now on ensuring that as many people as possible. Like, there was an issue prior to the crisis. There was about 18% of what we call the potential labour force in this country, people who wanted a job but were not necessarily seeking a job because they had either a disability or because they had a caring responsibility or there was another issue. So we have a huge issue with regards to labour market participation in this country, and all the more so now because of the pandemic. And unless the government gets its act together, then we're facing very serious issues with regards to social welfare payments and pension payments down the line.
Can I just say,
to be fair, we have the highest number of people working in January this year than we've ever had in the history of the state. So while there are difficulties, I think we have to acknowledge that we have the most people working ever in the history of the
country. Yeah, but I'm looking at percentages on that.
I listened to Micheál Martin on the RT News at 6 or 9 o'clock this evening, and he attributed this decision to the outcome of the election. And I have to say, the people voted for Sinn Féin in substantial numbers. So if nothing else, we've secured at least that the proposal that we will go
but
to...
But what ends, Matt? Because we all understand that this is a time bomb here.
OK, let's look at this.
Clearly
let's
we
look
all
at
don't,
this really.
Katie,
and well, the only party that has put forward proposals to actually increase the PRSI fund has been Sinn Féin. And Regina and others have taken every opportunity to try and take a kick at us from that. But it is a fundamental principle for us that if people wish to retire at 65, then they should be able to do so with the state pension. That is our position. And then our obligation then as a political party and as a government, when that opportunity arises, to put in place the mechanisms to allow that. We've just had a conversation about how 34% of young people are unemployed. How does it make sense to force people to work till they're 68 if they want to retire earlier, while you have such a cohort of young people that are desperate to get into the labour market? It doesn't. So what we need to do is have a fair taxation system, a fair PRSI system, and a fair society that allows those who wish or must retire at 65 to do so with the state pension. And if we were to respect the very clear wish that was expounded on this issue during the general election, that's what the government will be setting out to do immediately.
OK, I'm going to take a break there, but stay with us. We have a few more minutes left on this yet.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Just reading through, and we're getting a huge reaction. I want to thank you all out there who've been texting in big numbers tonight. Definitely, I think the childcare issue is a key issue for a lot of people. There's another one here. This is from Twitter. Somebody tweeted to Deborah Reynolds, tweeted to Adelaide Debate RTE. Childcare professional here got zero today. I earn less than €20,000 a year, just about keeping an 07 car going because I'm rural. Only one bus a day that goes to the opposite direction of my job. Where do I get the money for a new car? That's Deborah there. The government doing its best, says another texter, the government doing its best to do away with car ownership and make people dependent on public transport, which is not fit for purpose outside of Dublin. And a third one there, Late Debate, Green Party Oisin is completely out of touch with the reality of the majority of people, especially those outside the main cities who benefit from public transport. I change my car every 4 or 5 years. Budget is usually €5,000 to €8,000. How the hell can I buy an electric car which costs at least €25,000? That is Cormac. Again, that's the two issues seem to be the carbon tax and the childcare seem to be the two ones that are really exercising people this evening. Just a couple of minutes left. I wanted to say to you, Regina, your move to Dublin Fingal.
Yep.
Why?
I suppose when you look in today's climate, I live in Meath East. It's a three-seat constituency. The likelihood of a single party ever having two seats in a three-seat constituency is probably unreasonable. We have an incredibly strong representative in Helen McEntee, our current Justice Minister. I would like to stay in politics, and Dublin North is where I'm from.
And tell me, did Alan Farrell throw you a welcome?
Well, I,
to the constituency party.
Nobody likes having somebody, I suppose, rock up and say, I'd like to be your running mate, you know. But I get on very well with Alan. I think the constituency is absolutely enormous. Alan is and has his office based in Malahide. I have my office in Skerries opening next week. It's a big, big constituency.
It's a big move, though, isn't it? Moving constituencies.
Yeah, but look, you know what? I believe I had decided after the election earlier on this year that maybe it was time, because I'm 49, I'm at that stage in my life that if I'm going to do something else, I should do something else. And I think it's the experience in the department during COVID really made me see the value of public service and how much I love it. And so if I want to stay and serve the people, then I have to find some people to serve. And so I'm going to go and do some work in Fingal and see how I get on.
Off you go in search of people to serve. We only have I want to mention, Matt, because we were talking just before we came on air about what's going on across the border and the very high numbers of COVID and what they're going to do about that. I'm told, I just got this note, that a meeting got underway of the Stormont Executive just after 9:30. The meeting was adjourned after 10 minutes. It's understood SDLP Infrastructure Minister Nicola Mallon asked for time for the smaller parties in the executive to read the health paper, and it's due to reconvene at 11 p.m. We are expecting new restrictions to be introduced in the wake of this meeting. What will that mean for, like, particularly counties like your constituency across the border?
Well, there's a number of things. So our Sinn Féin's approach to this is the same north and south. We have to ensure that people are safe and that we try and tackle COVID in as best we can. We have to ensure that the financial supports for those impacted by those decisions are in place. For the past number of weeks, I don't think it's a secret, we've been trying to bring the executive to a position collectively where the public health advice would be implemented. What that means for the border region is what it meant in April. We've always said there needs to be an all-Ireland approach, an all-Ireland coordination to all of these matters.
If they go to the equivalent of level four, we should be going there too?
We need to put in place whatever measures are necessary. What we have north and south at the moment is a recommendation that people don't leave their county boundaries unless it's absolutely essential. That will remain in place regardless. But whatever is needed anywhere needs to be done. But we need to make sure that those people who are impacted by those decisions have the supports necessary in order to be able to withstand them.
OK, I'm actually over time now, so I'm going to have to leave you go. I want to thank all my panel for coming in to me this evening, and I want to thank all of you out there for listening and for so many of you for texting, getting involved in the conversation. Tonight's programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Ruth Kennington was on sound. And now, slightly, with apologies, Cathal, over to you on Late Day.